The Fan on Demand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. The Soccer Show with Nigel Reed and Bobby Rushi on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
A very good day. I'm Nigel Reed.
And I'm Bobby Rushi.
And this is The Soccer Show on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This week, out of tune, should TFC be playing exhibition games in season while the club continues to struggle in MLS? Does it benefit players or fans? Tell us what you think about the Reds' policy. Also this week, making a move. Montreal is up and running in the Champions League after a narrow win over San Jose. We'll chat to Impact keeper Evan Bush later. He saved a penalty to preserve the shutout. And later, getting prepared, we're in Florida to chat to Canada's U17 head coach Sean Fleming as his young roster continues its build-up to the U17 World Cup. All that and more, plus your opinion. This week, but only right here on The Soccer Show. Delighted you could join us. Delighted you're here. Looking suntanned and healthy. Not that you don't usually look healthy, but I just thought I'd throw that in there to put you in a good mood before we start.
Yes, because we're live finally, right? We've got our time slot back.
Just for once.
Well, it's nice.
The week before our birthday.
Yeah. They didn't invent another show to keep us off the air. So.
Have you been working on new shows that could push us back an hour or two?
I haven't been working on it. But it's great. It's great to be. I am healthy and I feel great.
Don't forget to keep those recipes coming in because next week, if they still want us here, it will be the Soccer Show's 7th birthday. And wow. Was it last year or was it the year before?
2 years ago.
2 years ago on our 5th birthday that some of the four men and the dog sent us some cakes.
Yes.
And we're a hungry bunch. And it's not just us. It's the guys, the professionals, the other side of the glass as well. So if you're catering for two, make sure you cater for five. If you're cooking up something delicious and tempting.
Be careful what you wish for.
For next week's 7th anniversary soccer show. In the meantime, we invite you to engage with us via email or via Twitter. You can email the show, nigel@fan590.com, nigel@fan590.com, or you can simply tweet me, @Nigel_Reed, @Nigel_Reed. Couple of people have. Get onto that in a moment. Some good guests coming up this week. Montreal Impact in action as the Canadian champions last evening against San Jose. Their first match in the Champions League, and they won. It wasn't the greatest match in the world, but these are three little mini groups, and only the winner of the little mini groups goes through to the quarterfinal. So it's all about the results, and the Impact got it done. Wasn't the greatest game in the world. Evan Bush will be our guest later, and he saved a penalty.
Well, he did, and it looks like Montreal's defense is coming together because it was a bit of an Achilles heel over the last month, and a lot of the Impact fans were worried about the back four and the goalkeeping situation, but over the last three or four games, they've been better.
Well, in cup football, it's all about the result. Doesn't really matter how you perform as long as you get a positive result at the end of the day. Now, having won that game against San Jose, and with an away game to come in Central America, they take command of that mini group and have put themselves in a good position as Canadian champions to represent Canada in the final eight of the Champions League, which they've done before a few years ago.
Yes, they were there. They were very close to making the final, ahead 4-1, I believe. They were ahead.
Yes,
4-1.
The big meltdown.
In the big meltdown in the second half, they got four goals scored against them in Mexico. And lost that opportunity. I know that Joey Saputo and his group, his team, are very anxious to redeem themselves.
Yes, I'm sure they are. Yeah. And so we'll talk to Evan Bush a little bit later on. Meanwhile, if you follow this show on a regular basis, and there's not too many of them, by the way, but if you do, you will know that the Canadian under-17 team, a lot of them just 16, one or two 17-year-olds, some time ago qualified for the Under-17 World Cup, which comes up a little bit later in the year. And Sean Fleming's the head coach. He's going to join us. He's on a camp down in Florida, Sunrise, I think, at the moment, with a group of about 24 players, which he's going to have to chop down or cut down to about 20, 21 for the big event. But he's looking as far and as wide as he can, just so as he's got a balanced roster. We've seen this team play, and we know there are two or three really good prospects on this team. But it's kind of, well, I was going to say it's a dress rehearsal. It's not even quite a dress rehearsal before the big event. But a lot of young players presumably busting a gut to try and catch his eye and make sure they are on that final roster.
Such an important moment in the development of the young professional at 16. And I'll be interested to hear from Sean where he finds these players and how he grooms them.
Okay, so Sean Fleming and Evan Bush will join us a little bit later on. As we say, we always welcome your contributions to the show via the email or Twitter. A couple coming in today on the back of last night's game between Toronto FC and AS Roma, and not really about the game or the result or the outcome, but about the fact that the game was played at all. It's not necessarily a new subject, because over the 7 years of TFC's existence, there have been a number of exhibition games or friendly games against European teams who are in pre-season coming and playing MLS teams who, of course, are in the middle of the season. There was a healthy crowd at BMO Field last night, but that wasn't the usual crowd, was it?
No, those are the crowd that was there last night don't frequent TFC games. A lot of them, of course, from Italian heritage. So-called Roma fans, probably just fans of Italian soccer, were there to cheer on their favorites from the capital of Italy. And it would have been nice if they would have left impressed with the home team. But I don't think that was the case, which is, and we can discuss even further why I think these games don't help TFC.
Well, let's do that. Christian Fletcher and Richard Barter, for example, have tweeted pre-show. Christian says, "Us diehard TFC supporters are dying to hear your response to Kevin Payne's comments. Looking forward to the soccer show." Richard Barter, will you be discussing Payne's arrogant dismissal of supporter groups from last night's? Thanks, says Richard. Well, if you haven't been following this during the day, Kevin Payne, the GM and president of TFC, was interviewed in-game on the telecast last night, and the question was put to him, this is not necessarily something that the TFC supporters groups want to see, i.e. visiting European teams, playing friendlies in pre-season. And I'm paraphrasing Kevin Payne. Basically what he said was, well, we're absolutely going to carry on playing these games and get used to it. And you can understand from the TFC supporters' point of view that probably didn't go down very well. Now, what is your thought, generally speaking, not only about the TFC fans, but, I mean, you've been there as a professional and played visiting teams coming in a North American mid-season. Does it help at all?
Well, I said this many times on the soccer show. For a player and for the TFC player, it's a no-win situation. Because if you go out and do your best, as Los Angeles did when they beat Juventus the other night 3-1, the excuse for the visiting team is that it's preseason and they're jostling their lineup. And of course, what do you expect in August from them? Of course, if you lose, it's because everybody already knows that you're not as good as the other team. And so psychologically, it's not a good moment for the player. It can be if the team is strong, if you have a good roster, if you're at home, and if you take the game seriously. I don't believe TFC took the game seriously, not when you change as many players as they did. I don't think it's fair to the fans because they charge a premium for this game. So what is the fan getting when he comes or she comes to watch Roma versus TFC? For me, TFC was embarrassed in the second half. It was awful. It was tough enough in the first half with the starting lineup. Roma much more superior, which is fine. But if it's a game, then let it mean something. If you're going to play these games, then have something at stake. Make a cup out of it. Give some prize money to the winning team. I don't know what it is. When I played in the North American Soccer League, we had an annual tournament called the North American Soccer League Cup. And we would invite, when I say we, because with the Cosmos, New York Cosmos, usually we're one of the featured teams. So there would be four or six teams, three from abroad, and three from the North American Soccer League, and then we would play a tournament. Then, of course, there would be something at stake. But when they just come in, it's a money grab, first of all, for Roma. Roma comes because they get a lot of money, and then TFC needs to get that money back, so they charge, you know, in this case, the poor guy from Woodbridge, you know, $120, $150 for the best seats. And then what do they get? They get Totti, who doesn't play until the 70th minute, and TFC, who changes, 16 players. So, get it straight, get it right, make the game mean something, and then maybe we'll come and make this and treat this game seriously.
But what you do get is Francesco Totti for 20 minutes, and you get one of Europe's storied teams playing on your pitch, on your grass at BMO Field, and that doesn't happen every other week of the season. And if there is a penchant among the Italian community to come and see AS Roma play, and they're prepared to pay what the club is prepared to charge, it's supply and demand. I mean, there was nearly a full house there. There was plenty of people wanted to see that game.
Yeah, and when I played, my pet peeve was, you know, instead of, saving your pennies for when an Italian team comes, why don't you support the local team? When I played, the local team was strong. We actually won games. We won championships. We were an attractive side. And we still didn't have the people come out. Today, the team is weak, and people come out to their games because the marketing is strong. And people like to come out Saturday afternoon and see the skyline as a background to the stadium. The true soccer fan isn't there. I think the fans, the TFC faithful, are saying, if you give us a good team, something we can be proud of, we probably will dig into our pocket for an extra 70, 80 bucks for this premier game, but let it mean something.
Okay, on we go. If you have thoughts on Bob's thoughts, then please get in touch. The email address, nigel@fan590.com, or tweet me @Nigel_Reed. Talking of tweets, Mark says, I await hearing Bob discussing Suarez and notions of quote-unquote player loyalty and or honouring contracts. If you've been following this story, you'll know that Luis Suarez is demanding a move away from Liverpool and believe there is a trigger in his contract which allows him to leave. Meanwhile, Liverpool have said, no, we're not necessarily going to sell you, and by the way, you can train alone in the meantime.
Well, this guy is just a train wreck at Liverpool. He's a good player. I have always liked Luis Suarez. I think he's talented. I think he's a great scorer. And he could help Liverpool. But I think Brendan Rodgers wants to get a fresh start this year. Doesn't want to start limping like he did last year. Liverpool's already had an incident with Suarez because of a racial comment. They've had an incident with Suarez last year because he bit somebody. And I think Brendan Rodgers basically says, I'm the boss, and you're not going to disrupt this team this year with your antics. So, quite frankly, out you go. Sit on the sidelines. As Mancini did with Tevez last year at Man City. When I was with the Cosmos, we had an incident with a great international by the name of Johan Neeskens, a Dutch international, played on the famous Dutch teams of the 70s.
Yes.
And he was late for the plane for a playoff game, and our coach, Hennis Weisweiler, very strict disciplinarian from Germany, told him that not only was he not welcome for the playoffs, but the whole next year, 1982, he did not play. He trained by himself. But he could, because he had a strong contract and the Cosmos had to pay him, it was guaranteed. But the coach didn't want him around. And this sounds like a very similar situation.
There you go. You see, you know, no player, and we all know this, no player is bigger than the club, whoever he is. We will talk to Evan Bush from the Montreal Impact very soon. You are watching The Soccer Show on Sportsnet World and listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
And a warm welcome back to The Soccer Show. It is Reed and Yerushi, just a week short of our 7th birthday. Will we still be sitting here in 7 days' time and stuffing our faces full of birthday cake and blowing out candles?
And you're worried?
I don't know. I do it on a week-to-week basis. I'm always worried, me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was worried before the show started tonight when the computer started to crash, and I was thinking, I'm not going to be able to read the intro. And it's the only scripted part of this show. I had to rewrite it twice, and the second time I had to write it very quickly. Let's put it that way. I'm a bit of a worrywart, me. So my mum says.
No comment.
Okay. You remember last week on the show, we're going to talk to Evan Bush just a second. You remember on the show last week, we were talking about the MLS announcement that there were going to be four new franchises in the fullness of time before 2020. And it looks, in all probability, as though it will be the other side of the 49th parallel, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke to Kyle McCarthy from Fox Soccer. That's what we did. And had a very enlightening chat with him. And if you haven't listened to that show, you can always go back and listen to the podcast on iTunes. But Matthew says, what do you think about Edmonton? They have a good fan base for soccer there. It's just as another Canadian team welcome. Well, if you listen to what Kyle was telling us on the show last week, I'm not sure it's a question of whether or not they're welcome. It's a question, as Kyle pointed out, from an American point of view, bearing in mind whether we like it or like it not, MLS is an American company operating out of America, that it doesn't make an awful lot of sense for the American teams and the American executives who run this league to have a Canadian franchise when it comes to the TV broadcasts.
That's correct. Remember that the league started and declared that they weren't going to have any teams outside of the U.S. It wasn't going to be like the old North American Soccer League. But when the league started to hemorrhage a bit and they needed help, then they had to go to stations that they could count on. And Toronto was a secure station. And, you know, the crowds have proved it. Very successful franchise. And then they've rebounded after that with Vancouver and Montreal. Yes. Two more great franchises, and now, of course, that they have a little bit more stability, now they have their American chat again. So they've become an American league with an American agenda, American TV, American rules, you know, no break for Canadian players. So, you know, that's just the way it is until we get our act together into Canada and be a little bit more competitive.
In the meantime, there are opportunities for Canadian players, generally on Canadian teams, and one or two on American teams. Will Johnson, of course, good friend of this show, is the man in charge and wearing the armband with the Portland Timbers, who are going very well. But you mentioned the third Canadian franchise there, the Montreal Impact, who are doing very nicely in their second season, heading not only to the playoffs, it seems sure, but also the Canadian champions, and as of last night, back in the CONCACAF Champions League. Which brings us nicely to our first guest on the show, who is Evan Bush, the Montreal Impact goalkeeper, who had more than a little to do in last night's game against San Jose. He joins us on the line. Hi, Evan.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
We're doing very well. We appreciate your time, and congratulations on last night's victory.
Thank you very much.
Not the greatest game, I think you'd probably agree with us, but a win's a win in cup soccer, as Bob and I were saying, and Bob knows all about that. It's really, you know, in these mini leagues, Evan, it's got to be all about the result, hasn't it?
Well, of course, you know, it's not always going to be the prettiest in these games, because both teams want to, you know, make it hard on the other team, scoring goals and whatnot, and they put a big emphasis on the defensive side of the ball, so sometimes the games get choppy, but at the end of the day, the result's all that matters, and you know, we got the goal we needed to, and we kept the clean sheet and got out of there with the win, so we're feeling good.
Well, you did keep the clean sheet, and that was a lot to do with the fact that you saved a penalty early on in the game, and I think even you would probably say it wasn't the greatest penalty ever taken, but these things have to be saved, and the fact that you managed to push that away, I mean, that changes the momentum of the game right there, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. You know, if we go down 1-0 there, it makes it difficult for us, because San Jose can then sit in a little bit and act a little bit more defensive-minded, not expose themselves quite as much. You know, the game changes at that moment. Like you said, it wasn't the best penalty in the world, but, you know, you go the right way and you have to make the save, and it's something that gave our team a lift, I feel, and you know, you could feel the energy in the stadium with the fans and whatnot after that save, and, you know, 6 minutes later, we get the goal we needed to, so...
Yeah,
you know, that 10-minute stretch there was huge for our team, and it was probably the moments in the game that ended up giving us the result that we needed.
I'm going to let Bob talk to you in just a second, but I want you to be honest with our listeners and viewers. When it comes to penalties, and as an amateur goalkeeper and no more myself, what's the strategy here? I mean, do you actually sit down and do your homework as a professional, thinking, well, if there is a penalty, I need to know probably who's going to take it, and if I know who's going to take it, which way I'm going to go? or is it just a spur-of-the-moment decision?
Well, there's certainly some studies that go into it. As far as San Jose, they had taken a couple penalties in league play leading up to our game. Those penalties were taken by Wondolowski and Bernardes, though. So Gordon hadn't taken a penalty this year, so I wasn't really sure which way he was going to go. So it was those other two. I had a good idea of what they were going to do, but Gordon was new on the spot this year, so I just kind of had to go with my instincts as far as which way he was going to go, and it proved to be a pretty good guess, I guess. So.
Hey, it looked impressive. Looked impressive to us. Bobby, talk to us.
Yeah, Evan, when Montreal came to Toronto in the first game of the Neutralite Cup, they were accused, or Montreal was accused of not caring about the game. The lineup was not what the fans expected, and there was a lot of speculation that perhaps Montreal was thinking more of the league. But with all the internationals you have, Nesta, Ferrari, DeVayo, etc., I would think that doing well in this competition would be just as high a priority, perhaps even as the league.
Oh, it definitely is. And when we got a lot of criticism for that first game in Toronto, it was criticism that we probably deserved as far as the way we played the game, not so much for the guys that were on the field. I think we approached the game as a club and a team in a way that we wanted to win that game, and we thought the guys that we put on the field would give us a good chance of doing so. It just so happened that we didn't play a very good game that night. We didn't have, guys like DeVayo and a couple of the other main guys that night, but it was also a situation where that weekend coming up, we had a big game in league play. So we were trying to juggle, a few things at one time. And at the end of the day, the result in that first game wasn't what we were looking for, but we were able to make up for it when they came to Montreal. So everything seemed to work out at the end of the day, and now we're in the position that we want to be in, and we're doing well in that position.
Yes, and the last month has been challenging for the Impact. You had such a great start, won a lot of important games away from home, and were on top of the East for a while, and comfortably so. You had some problems in the back. It looks like things are getting a little better, and perhaps some of those guys who have big reputations are taking a lot more responsibility.
Yeah, I think so. We've dabbled with a few different formations in the last month or so, trying to see what we look like with different guys on the field in different positions. So I think that may have led to a little bit of uncertainty at times. But at the same time, like you said, we have a lot of guys that are very experienced in those positions, and they're stepping up to the plate and doing what they're capable of now, especially when we're at home. I think that's three clean sheets in a row or something at home now. So we haven't been giving up goals at home, which is definitely a priority. So now that we're heading back on the road this weekend in Chicago, hopefully we can sort out giving up goals on the road. I think we will. I think we have the right guys to do so.
So let's talk a little bit about your situation, because you've played all the way through the Canadian Championship and now into the CONCACAF Champions League. So feather in your cap as an individual, but you don't need us to tell you that when it comes to goalkeeping, Evan, there's only one position, and most of the season you've had to play back up to Troy Perkins. What's the relationship like there?
Me and Troy get along really well. We have a really good relationship on and off the field. As soon as they brought him in, I knew that he was one of the hardest working goalkeepers in the league, and I pride myself on being a hard worker as well, and staying after training, coming to training early, stuff like that. So we work really well together, and I think that we've brought the best out of each other. I think if you ask Troy, he likes working with me, and even Max Crippo, who's the third goalkeeper here, yeah. We all work really hard together, and good things happen when you get guys that can work hard together.
So is there anything that you can do, Evan, other than work as hard as you can in training? I'm sure you've had a conversation with the coach, and he's explained what he expects of you. But short of putting a pillow over Troy Perkins' head when he's having a nap to get into the first team, is there anything else that you can do to push your own claims at this stage?
You said it earlier. It's tough being a goalkeeper, especially if you're a second goalkeeper. Troy's been, I think, phenomenal this year. I think that, in all honesty, he should have been an all-star in Major League Soccer. And maybe the stats would say differently because we've given up a lot of goals as of late. But I think that early in the season, and even as of late, he's been terrific. You know, he hasn't been giving up goals that he shouldn't be giving up. He's been doing well with what he needs to be doing, and I think he's been one of the rock steady guys on our team. As far as my situation and getting more games, it's something that, you know, as a goalkeeper, sometimes you just have to be patient and, you know, wait for things to happen. You know, you don't want to see injuries happen or bad run of form from any guys on your team, because they're your teammates and your friends. But, you know, you have to be ready for those situations occur.
And they do from time to time. Patience is a virtue, and we're sure your chance will come. Evan, delight to talk to you. Continued success with the Impact and in the Champions League. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Evan Bush, Montreal Impact. Tough being a number two goalkeeper. You know, we saw Stefan Fry last night playing for TFC in that exhibition game. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I don't want to speak ill of Stefan or any professional player, but you know, the life, the that spark, it just doesn't seem to be there sometimes.
Well, I mean, it is the toughest position on the field. It is the most important, and it's the anchor of the team. Yeah. And you know, that you have to have this intrinsic belief between goalkeeper and the 10 field players in front of you as a goalkeeper. And the trust factor is so important. The coach and the players have to trust the goalkeeper. And Evan Bush did himself an incredible favor by performing admirably under pressure, making the big save when it counted on the penalty that he saved against Alan Gordon. So, and that's healthy, you know, but him and Perkins, they are mates, I'm sure, but deep down inside, they would admit to themselves that, you know, they'd want every opportunity to better the other individual. No question
about it. So Evan really secretly is thinking that maybe Troy Perkins will break his leg in the next game, and then that gets him for the rest of the season, you see. But that's it. I mean, it's a dog. I mean, you've got to have depth. I'm joking, of course, but semi-seriously, you've got to have competition for places, serious quality competition for places in every position, because the player, and you know, if you've got the jersey, then you've got to be forced to stay on top of your game so that the guy who's behind you, hoping you do twist your ankle, isn't going to get a sniff at your jersey.
Absolutely. And you know what? Players are not equal on every team, especially in the North American Soccer League. Right. I'm sorry, in the
MLS.
Major MLS. Oh, boy. Yeah. And, you know, you're not going to – if Nesta makes three mistakes, he's probably going to keep his sweater. If Brovsky makes three mistakes,
he's out.
You know, he's out.
All right. We're going to talk to Sean Fleming very soon when we continue on The Soccer Show, Sportsnet World, and on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. The Soccer Show with Nigel Reed and Bob Irushi on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What a save!
It is always good conversation on The Soccer Show, so we hope. Most of it provided by you, via email or via Twitter. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you, and maybe, just maybe, we'll mention your name on our 7th anniversary show, which will be in a week's time, if we're still here, if the suits upstairs think we've got enough beans to count. Nigel@fan590.com. Nigel@fan590.com. Or tweet me @Nigel_Reed. You'll remember on last week's show, we're going to talk to Sean Fleming, by the way, in just a sec. You'll remember on last week's show, we were talking about Gareth Bale, probably the world's third greatest player, if you take out Messi and Ronaldo, and his impending world record move to Real Madrid, or so they say. I've noticed it's all gone quiet and
very quiet.
Very quiet, which means they're probably down to the serious negotiating now. one or two of you had thoughts on whether or not he should go, because he's still a youngish player, a star, of course, in the EPL, but should he be risking his reputation by going to the giants of Real Madrid and perhaps sitting on the bench and not playing every game and perhaps being confined to a left winger? Here's what one or two of you think about the possible move. Tom says, not sure if Bale's style is suited for the Spanish game. Sell him and then get him back a few years later for a discount. Well, you know what? The way Spurs do their business, that wouldn't necessarily surprise me. And then Acuna says it's the right time for Gareth Bale to leave because he is in his peak form, and who knows if he can repeat or surpass last season. Well, I'm prepared to make a little wager with you, Acuna, that Gareth Bale, if he goes to Real Madrid and starts the new season with them, absolutely will not repeat what he did for Spurs last season in terms of goal scoring. I can almost assure you of that. And I'm not a betting man. And I should have been about a week or 10 days ago when I had a premonition that the royal baby would be called George. And I thought, okay, maybe I'll put $100 on this. But I'm not a betting man, so I didn't. And I think it was about 5-1. And Prince George it is. I've been kicking myself ever since.
I will say, though, that great players become better when they're around better players, Nigel. And Gareth Bale is probably licking his chops knowing that when he goes to Real Madrid, you know, he's going to have a supporting cast that, in my opinion, is much better than where he is
well,
right now.
Well, you see.
Will make him probably a better contributor to a winning team rather than, you know, the big fish in the little pond where he is right now.
How dare you? How dare you refer to Tottenham Hotspur as a small fish in
is.
A big pond?
It's it's a small club.
Disgusted.
You can't compare Tottenham in England to Roma, for instance.
But here's
in Italy. I mean, come on.
But here is the point. If he has been the playmaker at Spurs and suddenly see he won't be, he will be part of the supporting cast. He won't be surrounded by, he'll be part of the, you know, best supporting actor category. He won't be lead actor anymore if he goes to Real Madrid. But that's a discussion for another day.
I hit a real
no,
sore spot.
You didn't. I'm coming back to that later in the show because it is time to welcome our second guest on the soccer show this week, friend of the soccer show. Sean Fleming joins us on the line from Florida, where he is putting the Canadian U17 roster through its paces. And they are preparing, as you know, for the U17 World Cup, which comes up in the Middle East, the UAE, in October and November. So down in Sunrise, getting prepared. There's going to be another camp, I think, in Mexico, closer to the event. Sean, welcome back to the Soccer Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
What do you think about Gareth Bale? Should he go or should he stay before we get on to the U17s?
I think he should go. You know, I think he just had a year, you said the year of his life.
Yes.
I don't think he'll have again.
No.
Timing's just perfect. And I think with the cast at Real Madrid, which the boys got to see last night live when they played in that championship against Chelsea last night, and just seeing how he would fit in there, it'd be, an incredible team to watch with him added into it. So,
Thank you.
Yeah, well, there you go. You and Urushi agree on something, which is no great surprise. No great surprise to me. People forget. I mean, we're talking about the U17s, and people forget that Gareth Bale, as a 17-year-old, when he was with Southampton, was a left back. Then he was converted into a left winger. Then he sort of blossomed into a playmaker. So sometimes, I mean, I'm not saying he's a late developer by any means, but sometimes you don't quite know what you're getting with a 16 or a 17-year-old player. You think he's a left back, but actually he's got a lot more about him, which only comes out as he gets bigger and stronger, I guess, Sean.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I think back to qualification, Jordan Haynes, who played in central midfield for us, was basically out of necessity because of a bad injury and another player not being available. Anyone had the tournaments of his life. And now, he's done incredibly well in the middle of midfield where we were looking for the left back. And even here, you know, it's great to have the opportunity to try kids in different positions and with different combinations. And it's at their young age, you never really know. And some blossom when you put them at those new challenges. And it's a great opportunity for them.
And what I liked about what you've done here, Sean, is notwithstanding an excellent performance in Panama where your team got to the final of the tournament to qualify for the World Cup, you've made some changes. You've brought in new players and created that competitiveness that, in my opinion, needs to be ongoing for everyone to be kept sharp and play their best.
Absolutely, Bob. It's been a real great atmosphere to the camp here. It was at the beginning of the camp we started because, of course, there's five new players in, and then, you know, and everyone else had worked so hard to qualify. But I said to the kids, my last sentence to them, and it was pretty harsh because we just went through the Honduras game where we scored in injury time to tie it, and we score in last 2 minutes of extra time to tie it, and then we win in penalties, and then About an hour and a half later, I'm telling them my job now is to go and look to see if we can make this team better. And a few of their faces just dropped, you know, because they've just done so well. But it really is that, because that's the kind of appetite we want the players to have, is to keep pushing themselves and be self-motivated to push themselves. And I tell you, just bringing in the new players here has been an incredible environment when we're playing and doing our, found the chance to 11v11, because we normally don't have 24 players in a camp. And it's been just fantastic to see how the players are pushing each other, and very gratifying as a coach.
And we know, Sean, that the bulk of your team comes from the academies of Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal. But I've noticed that, and I'd like to ask you how this can happen. I've noticed there's a couple of players. Eric Davies is currently with the FC Dallas Academy, and Matt Greer is with the Philadelphia Union Academy. How does a young 15, 16-year-old Canadian boy end up in an American academy?
Just by their parents moving.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what I thought. I'd be just, so it's funny where, you know, the parents of these young boys are looking for any opportunity to help develop, you know, their son.
For sure. And I think that, Bob, that's a success we've had. The number of emails I get now from across the world, to be quite honest, you know, of people who would like to play for Canada, you know, has increased. And,
good.
You know, but we obviously want, I want obviously kids who really are proud to put on the jersey. You know, it's very, very important to me, to the whole national youth team staff, that we want to make sure that kids who are coming in to play for Canada want to 110% play for Canada. And you know, it's been very gratifying again to see how these kids have come in with their attitude they've had in a difficult circumstance, to be honest, when they're walking into a team that's qualified. And but they've really played with great composure and showed great pride.
Rather, as you say, than youngsters using Canada as a flag of convenience, that's excellent to hear, the fact that you want players who want to play for Canada, not just because they've qualified for the U-17 World Cup. You've got another camp coming up in Mexico, so what are you using this one for, Sean?
Great. We're trying to tweak things, trying to give a little bit new look to the team. Again, we've had some opportunity to train here, which is not, sometimes just a little bit of time, but we've had more time than usual, so it's been great. Again, it's to reassess the players, the ones who are with me in Panama, to see where they're at. And also then, because I've, you know, scouting these other players, you never really know until you get them into the environment against the players head on head, where I could do an accurate assessment. And so we use that. We're going to do some different tactics for sure in the games down here. We played a very good game against the Fort Lauderdale Reserve Strikers, a men's team down here, which is a great challenge for us. Mm-hmm. And again, the great thing here is it's very hot down here, and mm-hmm. I just love how the kids have dealt with things. They're not worried about the heat or whatever. There's no excuses. We go down a goal again, which this team seems to do quite often, which isn't my plan, I'll tell you that. But they come back again, and they show great resilience again. And, you know, not just the result 2 days ago, but it was more the just how they went about it. And their performance, again, was very good.
Well, and let's remind everybody that the World Cup is in the United Arab Emirates.
Well
and,
done.
And in October, it's still bloody hot out there, isn't it? And so it makes sense to be in Florida in summer. It probably makes sense to be in Mexico in September, all leading up to the World Cup, which will be played under real, hot conditions.
Absolutely. That was kind of the rationale why we planned this like we have. And, you know, going to Mexico, because the draw is August 26th, so we'll head over to UAE on the 24th of August. And I'm pretty sure we're probably going to get a South American team, so to play the style that's in Mexico will help us to prepare for that game against whoever it is that we get in our group. So, yeah, for sure. And then the heat is definitely, I don't know if we'll be as hot here looking at the past years and what the temperature has been at UAE in October. But it's still, I think, going to be fairly warm, and we don't know what time the games will be at. If it's in the evenings, of course, that'll be a significant difference.
Well, it will. You know what I think, Sean? I think a lot of these are 16, 17-year-old lads, and if they're going to play in a World Cup in the UAE in October, November, I think with a little bit of luck, they'll just about be in their prime in time to represent Canada at the 2022 World Cup, which, of course, will be played in Qatar in the heat of the summer there. So they'll be well used to it by then.
I hope so. I hope that's exactly what we're talking about at that time, that Canada's in the Senior Men's World Cup there. I love it. So.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, delighted to talk to you, Sean. Continued success. We'll chat to you, I'm sure, again before you head off to the UAE, but pass on our best wishes to the boys and continued success.
Thanks very much for having me.
Sean Fleming, Canada U17 coach. I love to watch these young boys coming up because you just don't know. And the failure rate is high. We've said it on this show many times. Not all of these guys who look great at 16, 17 will have the opportunity to play professionally. But one or two of them, just one or two of them, will be able to make money out of soccer and make a decent living. It's great to see them right at the start of their careers.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be a very interested Benito Floro, who's going to be watching this competition, watching the growth of this team as he prepares to piece together what will be the future of Canada's national team.
That's about all we have time for this week on the show, because the music has started and a beer is calling. So we thank you for tuning our way or stumbling across us, whichever way it was. We hope if you stumbled across us, you'll stumble across us again in 7 days' time.
Happy birthday.
When we'll have our seventh birthday kick here, without doubt. We want to say thanks to our professionals the other side of the glass. He's Bobby Arushi. I'm Nigel Reed, essentially, so you don't have to be. Until next time, thanks for watching.